Terminus. It's time for another episode of
Paranormal.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, it is Friday, it is 10 Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and it is that time. Well, technically, we're 5 minutes over, but hey, it's still that time. And Paranormal is here. Now, Murr is out on assignment again, and we will be getting her back very soon. We've got a wonderful, an amazing, on the edge of your seat, two-week, and yes, I am saying it, two-week special on... JFK. Why? Well, because we've got a couple of guests that we're going to be talking with. First, tonight, let me introduce probably one of the most skeptical people out there. I have a feeling he actually has debunked his own birth. But, I mean, that is just normal, because when a skeptic comes into the field, you have to know they don't believe. And so, you know, we've tried. I've even heard the werepig say he's debunked long division, but who knows? So without further ado, let me introduce you guys to not only a publisher, but yes, he actually has a title, professor, and that is Alan Gilbreth.
Good evening.
Been a while since you've been on the show.
It has. It's been quite a while.
Yep, it has been.
Did they stop sending you the pipe bombs and other things?
Yeah, they were the
okay, good.
The restraining order dropped. You know, so yeah, we're yeah, definitely. But no, I appreciate you being here for this. I was really blown away, because when I first started discussing this with you, I wasn't expecting our special guest of next week to actually contact and say next week. I kind of expected it was going to be a pre-record. But yeah, this guy blew me away. Now, let me I'll tell you who he is for those who don't know. Actually, November 22nd of last year was the 50th anniversary of the assassination of JFK in Dallas, Texas, for those who don't know where exactly it was. We'll get a little more details into that in just a moment. But what I do want to mention is there was a gentleman who did a documentary. He is a very well-known detective. He brought down five of the mafia heads who are now serving time in prison for the rest of their life. And he's done a lot. So he is a, you know, this guy knows his job. Let's just put it that way. Well, he did a documentary last year that is out, and we'll tell you what the documentary is within the show and give you a chance to kind of watch it too, and tell you where you can watch it. But we've got evidence. We've got something tonight that we have never had before, and we're going to talk about it. And the reason Alan is with us tonight is because you need the skeptical side. When there's the paranormal, you know, you always have the believers and the non-believers, and you have the skeptics, and you have the people who weigh both ways, and then you have the people like, I don't know. So we're going to start with the first episode tonight with the skeptic side, because we want to see what the skeptics actually think, and especially with the evidence we're going to offer. And I think you probably have heard some of it already, right?
Oh, we've been hearing about this since, I don't know, somewhere around 1963.
Oh, since it happened. Well, let me go down it. JFK, or John Fitzgerald Kennedy, the 35th president of the United States, was assassinated at 12:30 in the afternoon, Central Standard Time, on Friday, November 22nd of 1963 in Dealey Plaza, Dallas, Texas. Kennedy was fatally shot by a sniper while traveling with his wife, Jacqueline, and Texas Governor John Conley, which we will talk about him here in a little bit, too, because that so-called mysterious bullet theory, I was blown away to find out how that actually happened. So we're about to destroy that theory. Anyway, his wife, Conley's wife, was in the vehicle as well, and as well as a Secret Service agent who was driving the vehicle. There was a vehicle behind him that was with Secret Service agents as well. And there was more in this motorcade. There was a lot of other people in this motorcade, and believe it or not, some press too. There's a lot of stuff we're going to talk about. Now, the number one thing that everybody knows is the fact that Oswald, Lee Harvey Oswald, supposedly took 3 shots that were the shots that were heard around the world, so to say, that killed Kennedy, right? And, I mean, that's what...
That is the ugly rumor, yes.
Right. Now, the problem is, we're never going to know what he did and didn't do. Because per what happened in the next day, I think it was less than 24 hours, he was killed. So, and that part I never understood. Did Jack Ruby ever say why he killed him?
Oh, he was like many other people. Today, we would have said he was a rabid fan.
Mm-hmm.
So he, you know, by his own confession and admission that, you know, he was just so overwhelmed by what happened.
Right.
That he just, you know, it didn't want to wait to see it on TV. He didn't want to wait to see, you know, so he just, you know. You know, I'll save you guys a trial. You know, it's basically, you know, the story at large.
Right.
Just a big fan of Kennedy or just a big fan of the president. And depending upon the spins, I mean, you can, we're already probably 300 conspiracy theories in by the time you even say Jack Ruby.
Yeah. We don't even, I mean, Jack Ruby is just like.
We haven't even, you know, Jack Ruby is you know, somewhere, you know, conspiracy theory number 309.
Right. Well, as many of you might have heard me talk in the past, there was something that was disclosed to me years ago that I never really shared, and I shared one day on the air. It wasn't long after that this documentary came out that actually declared that happening, that particular event. So we'll get into that a little bit. But, well, let's go with, I guess, with the facts that are known, are the easy ones to remember. There was a total of 3 shots. The first shot, which is called the magic bullet theory, or mysterious bullet theory, was a shot that went through Kennedy's neck, that exited through there, hitting Conley. I believe shattering one of his ribs, coming out, hitting his wrist, and then lodging into his leg, if I remember right. I think the last part is the part I can't remember, but it did lodge into his leg, if I remember right. And this is the shot that is the most questionable shot of them all, right?
No, they've questioned every single shot. So, you know, you get into... Oh my gosh, you get into bullet dynamics, you get into reflection, refraction, you get into of, you know, how do these things bounce around in a human body, how much resistance is there, how far can a bullet travel through human flesh, through bone, through, of, it's,
well, no.
You know, it is at best an educated guess where the bullets came from and where the bullets wound up.
Right. Well, knowing what we know, it was a bolt-action rifle. I want to say it was an M91 Italian Carcana. I hope I said that name right. I do have.
Well, it was not. It was not of. You know, it was not a local Texas product.
Right.
As the state of Texas pointed out within minutes.
Yes,
you know.
But it was known as a sniper's rifle. That it does, you know, does travel at longer distance. I have seen, they call it the assassination to be a sniper style assassination, but I have seen the actual bullets, and in studies that they've done comparing the bullet with the bullet that was used to in this particular rifle, these are known as the sniper type bullets, and we both can agree on that part, right?
Yeah, which, you know, To just kind of give an idea of, a lot of people think a bullet is a bullet.
Right. Yeah, they're not.
And, you know, even in the 60s technology, even in the technology of the Civil War, a bullet was not a bullet. You know, a bullet, its design, its trajectory, how well it holds together, what its tumble factor is, all of these things have a purpose and a point.
Exactly.
Which is why you have different caliber bullets. This is why you have different size, different grains, different loads. Everything has a purpose. And if you're out hunting and you've got a hunting rifle and you're using a hunting bullet, a bullet designed to bring down the prey you're looking for. If you're deer hunting, you know, you don't want to tear the deer apart. You're trying to kill it for meat, but you want to knock it down. You want to take it down in a single shot. So you're not looking for something that's going to deeply penetrate and explode out of the animal on the other side. You're looking for something that's going to mushroom out, and I mean really pack a lot of punch, transfer a lot of energy at that point.
Right.
An assassin's bullet is designed to make a tiny little hole going both ways.
Mm-hmm.
It is designed to kill you. It is not designed to kill you immediately. They don't really care if you get up and run around for a while. It's once the shot is made, they're pretty confident at this point in time you're going to die if just pieces of you did not come off automatically.
Right. Now, the other thing about this particular bullet, the style of bullet that was used, it is not a type of bullet that is known to shatter or explode. It literally, the time it will get damaged is when it hits its stopping point, so to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's designed for penetration. It's a typical long-range assassin-style bullet. You're designed to make a little bitty hole on one side. And if it doesn't really hit anything interesting, it'll make a little bitty hole on the other side. If you do hit something interesting, it's designed to make little pieces go splat.
Exactly. Well, here's where we get to the fun part. Now, I'm about to put a light on this mystery bullet because I have actually looked this up myself and I was like, wow, I did not know this. So. I want everybody to remember the bullet. So we're just going to put the bullet aside for a moment, you know, the style of bullet. But when the car that was taking Kennedy was driving, Conley was sitting in the front. Well, everybody thinks of the vehicle having the seats literally all in order, right? I mean, you've got the couch seat in the back, and then you've got your seats in the front. And so you would think they're just kind of lined up in a straight line, correct?
Well, they're actually not.
Bingo. That's a key.
Big secret from the early 60s in a presidential motorcade.
Yep. There is an answer right there that a lot of people did not get. Conley's seat was actually over almost a foot, if not a full foot. From the edge of the door. So when there was a total of two shots that happened. The first shot, apparently, according to witnesses, ricocheted off of the concrete, off of the asphalt, which created I'm trying to think. I don't want to say shrapnel, but, you know, it kicked up some of the asphalt, and it was the first part that hit Kennedy. And he's like, oh my God, I got shot. This is what caused Conley to turn. In that turn, the second shot was taken. This is where that mysterious bullet theory begins. Because Conley was turned at that particular angle, and you have to see the documentary because it will explain exactly the line. This, I mean, and it's a perfect linear line when it's set upright. But you can see where Conley is turned, the bullet exits through Kennedy's neck and hits Conley to go exactly in the pattern described. The bullet didn't, I mean, even though it shattered the ribs and it, I think it made a pretty clean shot through Kennedy's neck without touching any bone. I think that would have slowed it down. But the way I understand it, it touched no bone whatsoever, right?
As I understand, that was what they would lovingly call of a high damage flesh wound, because it's an interesting area, but nothing all that hard to.
But it was enough.
You know, not redirect the bullet.
Exactly. And now there's a reason why I made a comment here. Kennedy said he was, oh my God, I've been hit. that was the first comment off of the first bullet, and there's witnesses who attest to hearing a first shot. His wife testifies to the facts, or testified to the fact that he said that. So did everybody else in the vehicle. The shot that went through his neck was said that he could not speak after that shot went through. So there would be no way he could have said at that particular point, "Oh my God, I've been shot." So it was the first comment that actually turned Conley to allow the bullet to line up perfectly to get the straight shot through Conley as well. This literally destroys that magic bullet theory. I mean,
well, you know, the actual ballistics of what we're looking at has been one of the most studied, most reproduced laser productions. Everything, you know, all of this has been studied to within just an nth of a degree.
Exactly.
And depending upon which variable you put where, you can slant the data a little bit this way, a little bit that way. Maybe you saw this, maybe you didn't. The problem with all of the video, is simulacra.
Yeah, it's because none of it's out in a full-fledged run.
Well, again, here's another problem, though. Simulacra is just the basic thing that something looks like something else.
Mm-hmm.
You see faces in clouds. We see bunnies in, you know, you see Mother Teresa in your toast.
Oh,
you know,
form a matrix scene, yes.
Yeah. And you're not looking at high quality. We're not looking at professional. Mm-hmm. We're looking at through the lens of 1963.
Right.
So keep in mind, Kennedy was pretty much the first politician that took one look at his opponent across there and went, "For the love of God, turn on a camera.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get in front of TV. I'm not sure if this TV thing's going to work, but one look at this dog, I'm going to win for sure." Does anybody remember who he ran against?
Oh, man, I knew you. That, see, there was the one question I wasn't expecting.
Well, he later becomes a president.
Well,
in disgrace.
Nixon.
Richard Milhouse Nixon was a huge part of the political landscape that Kennedy had to overcome to become president. And when you look at top politicians of the time, like Spiro Agnew and Richard Nixon and that kind of stuff, these guys played well on the radio.
Exactly.
Well, Nixon, you know, I like Ike, goes back to the days of the press reels. And here he was looking dashing in his little military uniform and his little bald head and his little cap and, you know, his little "I like Ike," you know, buttons and that kind of stuff. So that's the political climate that was.
Right.
Now, here comes Kennedy. Here comes his family. Here comes, God help us if we say it, a Catholic, with the audacity of family ambition of actually becoming president.
Right.
You know, so here's, you know, the Scotch-Irish whiskey connection, but from granddad all the way through the family. These people are moneyed. These people are well-heeled. They're well-educated. And, you know, little Mr. Kennedy is also a little bit of a war hero. He has not shied away from cameras before his main political ambitions were realized. So kind of in the "I like Ike" tradition, you know, here's the war issue. Here's this, we served our country. Here's the, you know, we were in danger, but we lived. So, I mean, there's great story building up behind this candidate.
Right.
And then we get on television. And now people can buy little brownie cameras. And, the you know, it's almost the precursor to today with our camera phones. Now, ordinary people could catch a moment.
But the problem was, is as soon as the incident happened, Secret Service was collecting all this.
But what did you catch?
Well, there is a picture that is catched. and we'll be discussing shortly, but I don't want to spoil that yet. What was Catched? Okay, well, the most famous film that anyone knows of is the Zapruder film. And there is a question in this film that I really wanted you to be somewhat of an expert on to help settle something on this. Because, do you know, for the longest time, I always believed the shot or the shots came from the front of the vehicle, not from behind.
Correct.
The way I'd always saw it and the way they kind of showed it in textbooks, it always looked like the vehicles were heading towards the depository, not away. And so recently I did discover that they are heading away from the depository, which made, whole much better sense.
Yes, they've come around the corner. They are now coming down the street there, having lived in Dallas for a while. Of course, everybody that moves to Dallas or visits Dallas
has to go to the spot, which I've
guess. I mean, everybody's got to go, and you got to take a picture, and you got to bring your laser pointer and look like a complete goob, dodging traffic, pointing at the buildings, and you know. It's a has to be done. It's like, you know, coming to Memphis and not seeing Elvis. You know, you just got
to
do it.
Now you just ruined it because now I'm going to have to do that when I go to Memphis. Golly.
Yeah. Yes, you too. Yeah.
Well, we're going to talk more into the bullet, and we are going to talk about a ballistics expert who has passed on since then, but does have a book out. So we'll discuss that here in a little bit, because that is part of there's evidence in there that was never touched until later, and we'll explain that in a moment. But the question I want to know real quick, in the Zapruder film, it's probably the most graphic piece of film of the assassination. And yes, it's not clear, and I gotta say thank God, because that would not be a pretty sight to see that clear. but there is a shot that hits Kennedy in the head, which is literally explodes.
Correct.
And
obviously a fatal shot.
Yes, definitely the fatal shot. Jacqueline actually jumps out to grab something off the back of the car. Now, speculation is that she's grabbing a piece of her husband's head. Others speculate that maybe she's trying to help the Secret Service agent on, but you do see her look like she picks something up, which I'm going to go with the guess that it is part of her husband's head, you know. But, you know, she's devastated at this point, you know, because now she's holding her husband right there and as he's taking his final breaths. And I'm sure that's not an easy task for anyone. But, you know, here's the thing. The motorcade's going at 11 miles an hour. And no, I'm not trying to make anyone do math, but the vehicle.
Here comes the word problem, everybody. Get your pencil and paper.
Right. The vehicle's going at 11 miles an hour away from the book depository. The particular shot that hits Kennedy in the head comes from behind, mind you. But the problem is pieces go backwards. At 11 miles an hour, is it possible that his parts of his head could actually still move back that far? Wouldn't there be a splatter effect going forwards?
Okay, well, here's where we get into Bullock dynamics. Here we go. Here's what we don't know. What we don't know is where and what did that bullet do inside of his skull.
Right. Well, we do know. We'll talk about that.
Well, we don't know. No, we don't know. Because there are no x-rays, there are no medical records to show us the actual intracranial damage that happened to JFK. Not that I've ever seen. And I mean, I've heard the people have talked to the doctor, and they asked this and they asked that, and I'm sorry, it was 1963. We were still advising pregnant women drink beer. We were still suggesting people smoke.
Okay, so what was wrong? No.
Medically, we're not there. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's not going to be an MRI of his head so we can see exactly what happened inside of it. Here's the thing. Bullets are designed to make little bitty holes going in, and they're designed to make a big, big mess somewhere on the inside or coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So depending upon the actual final path of the bullet. Was the bullet going at a slight upward angle? Was the bullet already tumbling? Had the bullet split? Had, you know, there's a lot of things going on here that could have created a larger splatter effect than a Hollywood-style blow-it-off-the-backside.
Right. Well, obviously, the film, the Zapruder film, is obviously not a Hollywood-style release. Well,
no, but it is also of insufficient quality to show us the pre-explosion.
Right. But what we do have from this, there is something massive, a piece of evidence that was discovered that people did not, and we're going to say some of the people, we're going to talk about the Warren investigation, who was the team to set up to actually investigate the assassination. And there's some really controversial questions within this, but...
One or two.
Oh, shoot. Hundreds.
Thousand.
Yeah. Anyway, see, that's about right there. But the trajectory,
yes.
Thank you, of the shot, the fatal shot to the head was not from the upward angle as if it was coming down toward, from the book depository. The fatal shot was at a lower level to the ground. Now, you're going to probably tell me that there is... that's just a speculation. Okay, that's understandable. I can expect that. Except for the fact that this is the piece that of evidence, the first one that I'm going to offer up. There was eyewitnesses of people smelling gun smoke at the ground level. Now, this is the people in the vehicles around Kennedy. If the gunshot from the sixth floor on the book depository was shot, and they're moving at 11 miles an hour, there's just no way that wind from up there is going to bring the gun smoke smell down to the ground. However, here's the best and most interesting part. 7 of the 11 people that witnessed smelling the gun smoke at ground level were Secret Service agents.
And again, you know, we can start the conspiracies right there. We can
well, no. These are witnesses. These are eyewitnesses who've been who were asked by the Dallas Police Department, and by other investigators doing the investigation. But they were never called. This is my first question: why were they never called to witness or testify this before the Warren Commission? Aha.
They've been asking that question since 1964. So,
how long did it take?
And let me throw in an interesting conundrum about Dallas. Another fact that is very rarely mentioned when it comes to investigating anything of an atmospheric nature in Dallas, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Because Dallas is built on the plains, there's not exactly a lot of hills, valleys. Yeah, you know, it's fairly flat, as you well know.
Right.
Okay.
Right. No, I know it's flat land. I know.
You know,
that.
When you look at the Dallas skyline, there's not a whole lot going on there, except for a lot of really tall buildings.
Right.
The issue with all of those really tall buildings is that they actually create basically their own micro weather and airflow.
Mm-hmm.
So, since most of the weather data at the time, we don't have, you know, pretty much exactly what was going on. You know, they didn't have weather.com back then watching everything.
True.
We really don't know if those odors could have been brought down into the crowd.
Okay. I could give you that. I would.
We really
that.
Don't know. I mean, all I'm doing is throwing in, it's even more nebulous than we thought.
Right.
You know, oh yeah, let me be skeptical. Well, let me point out the fact nobody had any freaking idea what kind of wind it was, air direction, what was the airflow like inside the artificial canyons of the buildings on a flat place on a hot day in Dallas, Texas.
Exactly. Well, okay. So, well, let's go to another piece of evidence. Now, this is a damning piece of evidence right here. Bonner Menninger. I hope I say his name right. I don't want to slaughter it because he's this guy was a ballistics expert for quite some years. This is a man who knows bullets, obviously. I mean, ballistic experts, who wouldn't know a bullet, right? And so not questioning anything that this man would say as far as what each bullet can and can't do, he dedicated his retired life up to his death to answer questions on the ballistic side of this assassination. He does have a book out for those who might want to find it. You might still be able to find copies of it called Mortal Error, The Shot That Killed JFK by Bonner Menninger. In his study, he actually stumbled across something that nobody else mentioned until last year. That the shot, the entry wound into Kennedy's head, was first mentioned by the doctor who did the autopsy. The entry wound was not the size that the other entry wound in his neck was, meaning there was a second type shot. Now, the question was, well, okay, what was the difference? Well, the bullet that was used by Oswald, and I've got too many names in my head now, the bullet used by Oswald was a 6.5 by 52 millimeter bullet. So, I mean, you know, when it made the entry, it was about a 6.5 millimeter entry hole. Now, knowing because the exit from the neck as well would be the one they compare to, that's what that size was. The entry wound to the back of the skull was at a different angle, not at the angle, because his head never was in the angle to where it could have been shot from upper portion to be there. It was actually, the angle from the shot to the head was at a lower angle, so the trajectory suggests from a different location. Okay, so, you know, the first theory, oh, the grassy knoll. Well, throw the grassy knoll out, folks. We're not even going to mention the grassy knoll ever again. Because this second, or the second shot, I call it, as far as the fatal shots, because the first one was through the neck, and the second one would be the one to the head. The second shot was at a lower angle and of a smaller caliber bullet. Now, you asked about the evidence of, you know, x-rays and stuff. Yes, I'll get to that in a minute because there was a question in that in a different investigation that was opened up by a president. So we'll talk about that in a moment. But the second shot actually was the size of a 5.5 millimeter hole. Now, help me on this. Could a 6.5 bullet go through or create a 5.5 millimeter entry wound?
Okay, here we go.
There's a reason I'm mentioning the size because we'll get there. We'll get there.
Yes, I think I even know where you're going with this, but here's the simple fact. Do we have the correct facts and the correct measurements?
Well, by the...
We got to start there.
Yes,
because
by
there are probably 50. There are probably 50 conspiracy theories right there with the veracity of any evidence.
Right. Well, I would give you this
at all
from the Warren report. By the report itself, it does state the different entry wound size. The guy who did the autopsy still put that on the report. It's the only piece of evidence that was never changed. So, and I do stress the never changed because what we'll find out on the second investigation in a moment. But I just want to point that out. In the Warren report, it actually states the two different sizes of the entry wounds.
But we're not that far off. And we're looking at a difference between a hard tissue entrance and a soft tissue entrance.
So you would assume that the soft tissue entrance would create a bigger hole?
No, smaller.
Well, see, that's the problem.
There's nothing to transfer energy to.
Yeah, see, now there's the problem, because the hole that was bigger was the one that was through the neck.
Well, but again, we're back to doubting the veracity of almost any of the data, because if the hole was bigger going into the neck, again, we go back to the earlier theory that that bullet was already damaged.
Well, see, and that was the other part about it. The particular...
So if that bullet was already tumbling and was not on an assassination-type trajectory, mm-hmm. you now have the bullet going through his neck sideways.
Well, but it never did go through his neck sideways. And so it went into in a straight trajectory, straight through, through soft tissue, and as you said, could not go any bigger. Here's the problem, though. The entry wound into the skull... thinking if that's even possible that that particular bullet could have exploded, per ballistic experts, no, it could not have. That particular style of bullet used was said no. I'm just saying that per ballistic experts. And Menninger is
again,
one of them.
We're debating semantics of damaged data from 1963.
Yeah.
And we're not that far off.
Well, really, we're not.
We're picking at the finest possible details to extrapolate data from.
Well, I'm going to be giving the answer what has been said is who pulled the trigger on the fatal shot. And what's going to shock a lot of people is it is not Oswald. Now, not saying that...
Not a new theory.
When you hear... When we finally say who it is and how, a lot of people are going to be... See, here's my question. I'm going to ask you this question before... I can't even do that right here yet. If you were given the truth right here, right now... Now, I know you're the biggest skeptic out there, but if you were given the truth right here, right now, you have hard, damning evidence. I mean, there is just no way to say that's not possible. What would you do? How would you react to it?
I hate to tell you, but that data cannot possibly exist coming from the 60s.
Okay, but I'm saying, you're already trying to go away from that. If you were given the truth on this situation...
You can't be.
Now, you're not helping me here. I want to know...
I understand, but you can't be. You're basically saying, Alan, if the TARDIS arrived in your living room...
Yeah, no joke.
The
it's
TARDIS
there.
Is not going to show up in my living room, as much as I would like it to do so.
What do you do if it does?
There is no such thing... as irrevocable evidence, especially from this era and time.
Okay, so let me ask you this then, because then you can help me conclude this theory. DNA evidence is not true evidence.
DNA evidence from when?
From anything. DNA still does not work properly.
That's like going back to the blood test. I mean, a blood test could very easily tell you who's not the daddy, but it doesn't necessarily pick which one of the guys with type O blood you are.
Well, and see, that's the thing. We've heard people who have committed murder and they claim to have their DNA evidence, and then when retested, that evidence does not match or something about it is off, but it's not the right. They've proved the DNA messed up here. So, I mean, it's not.
There's absolutely no test that is infallible. Correct.
Right. So there. And that's out in the open. Anyway.
Not a huge shocker. Just watch Jerry Springer.
Right? Anyway, but I'm just saying, we know there's people who know the truth. Still.
I doubt it.
No,
I doubt it severely.
I can't buy that.
Human being on this planet that actually understood the entire truth of what actually happened.
I can't buy that. Or they would have opened those files already.
What files?
The JFK files. Because
the files with the truth in them.
The ones that are
that
been
never
sealed,
existed.
The ones that have been sealed all this time?
I wouldn't trust them any more than what's been unsealed.
Okay. Well, let's
I'm sorry, you're looking at an era in time based on secrecy, power brokers, a Cold War environment of utter paranoia, and people willing to kill for their point of view or to maintain the world order or the power as it existed.
And people ask me, why don't you have Alan on the same time you have this expert on? There's a reason.
It's just, it can't happen. We can have something happen in front of us on the news today. You can lose an entire airliner.
Yeah, that's happened.
I mean, all right, we're not even talking about one little guy in a car. We're talking about a whole airplane
with
a world of satellites and spies and internets and Google Earth. And we can still lose today an entire airliner.
Yeah.
With the entire world, I mean, with modern electronics on board, with the entire world allegedly watching and tracking and keeping up with its every motion, we can still lose an entire airliner.
Right. Well, let me, because they are mentioning the bullet again in the chat room, I want to back to this real quick for a moment. Per the evidence that was given, there was a conclusion because this particular gun was on site in hands, and I won't mention who yet, but it was in the hands and not just witnessed during the motorcade, but even after the motorcade. Okay, just putting that one out there. And Secret Service hasn't denied that. Warren Commission hasn't denied that. I mean, this particular incident was documented, except for a portion of it, as we get with all the video, as you mentioned before. It's not complete information. But the particular bullet that is said to have made the entry into Kennedy's head, which would create a shatter effect, as we know, which would have caused the head explosion, was that from an AR-15, assault rifle 15. Which was seen in the hands of a particular individual during that time and even after at the hospital. Okay? I want to put that out there because we're going to be...
I know, you're enjoying the tease.
No, well, yes. But there's just... Oh, my God, there's so much. We need to get into some of these other things real quick. Here's another fact that was given. I did not know this. I actually just learned this during this event, that when there is a homicide in Dallas, there is a law that states they cannot release the body unless an autopsy has happened. That is a law. I don't know if you knew that.
Okay.
Did you know that?
Texas is strange. So.
Well, yeah. But it makes sense because it happened in their area. They need to know what kind of results before they pass it on. I mean, that makes sense, right?
Well, it makes sense, but we're again not talking about a sensible topic.
Well,
so
here's something that came up in this, and I thought this was pretty harsh, and this is kind of some damning evidence too towards the Secret Service, that they actually made both physical and verbal threats that they were removing the body without an autopsy.
Yes, there was, you know. There was the whole hullabaloo that there was actually no body to remove, that Kennedy didn't die, that he was actually walled off on life support in the hospital.
Yeah, I wasn't going to go there.
I mean, I remember all that from growing up.
Yeah, I've heard that story too. I wasn't going to go there on that. I mean,
but, you know, it's just that no matter what fact you want to put forward on this, there are at least 2, 3, maybe 4. And I'm not going to say substantive counter theories, but they are counter theories that have had some thought and some research. Maybe they're disprovable at this point in time, but they were presented as viable theories. And right. That is literally on every piece of evidence in this case.
There is a lot of viable stuff that is there. I'm not going to deny that. I mean, there's, golly, there's stuff that's come up since then. And here's one of the reports that I was talking about that came up since then was the fact that Clinton, when Bill Clinton was in office, he ordered an investigation into the assassination of Kennedy. Remember where we mentioned about the x-rays?
Uh-huh.
Well, this, the people that were, a lot of the people who were still around since the Kennedy assassination were investigated. They were brought in, they were in, you know, what do you call that? Interrogated, there we go. I'm trying to think of the word. I had so many different
questioned,
words.
Beaten, yeah. Rubber hoses, white lights.
Exactly.
Given a hard noogie, you know.
But, I mean, they were in, interrogated, and there was evidence that was given up. There was a x-ray that was taken. They actually had to clear the room. Now, this is another fact that I didn't know, that during the autopsy that was being performed in Washington, D.C., that they literally filled the room. The autopsy room with military experts, reporters. I mean, the list goes on. There was just so many people that they were shouting and talking over each other. They were rushing the guy to get the autopsy done. I mean, it was really bad. So the guy who actually had to take the X-ray at this time, as you know, we weren't sure about X-rays, so you had to clear the room. And they literally had to clear the room. It took them like 15 minutes to clear the room to take the X-ray. The X-ray showed a shattered bullet that was given and stored by these individuals at the time. Later, the guy who took the x-ray was said in the reports from the Clinton administration that he was ordered to change the x-ray, fake an x-ray with different bullet fragments. Now, this is off the report from the Clinton investigation. I don't know exactly what they called that investigation. I forgot the name of it, but... that particular investigation, that's just from the guy who took the x-rays.
Okay.
But that
and
is...
Elvis didn't die, he just went home.
We all knew that already.
JFK and Jack the Ripper, they're never going to be solved.
Ripper will never be, well, I don't know, maybe we will have, that might
there actually... There will always come down to the best possible evidence.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as many theories and films and that kind of stuff have pointed out, you know, follow the power, follow the money, follow the this, follow the that. My problem with all of that is you are trying to make sense of a time that is past. You're trying to make sense of people that were possibly not reasonable people even by their own time standard.
Well, let me ask you this.
So, did they fake evidence? Did they drop the ball? Did they botch? You know, anything is completely possible at this point.
Well, we know things were, some of the balls were dropped. We know that even the FBI states that the CIA had evidence that they were supposed to give back to the FBI that the FBI never got back. I mean, why would one governmental branch lie on the other?
Well, I don't know. You can ask them that today.
Let's not go there. But at this particular time, the Secret Service... This is the big thing about the Secret Service at the time. They were just starting. They were a brand new organization that was said to be one of the best. Okay, and they were trying to sell that, like the CIA and the FBI, who were already around at this time. Secret Service was to be a protective type organization that was trying to make an impression, and really big because of, you know, what was happening overseas as well.
Well, you know, keep in mind, the United States was also, you know, in an ideological war around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this ideology of World War II is over, but World War II is still very raw in people's minds. Korea is still a mess.
Right.
Vietnam is a mess about to happen. So all of these things about communism and the workers' rights utopian movement and fascism and all of these things are all very, very viable and tangible. They're not quite as historical as we think of them now. So the paranoia just between branches of the government, we still have that. We still have, you know, different types of the government looking at each other going, well, they didn't share. <You know? laughs>
All right. Well, let me give the piece of evidence that I was told that this is, and I
bring it on. Back that truck up.
Well, the thing is I never mentioned it to anyone. Never. Because like you, I'm like, yeah, right. Okay. At the time I worked in a restaurant, I met a gentleman, who was an elderly gentleman who claimed to have worked for the Secret Service. He actually told me that during the, day before Kennedy's, trip, towards the assassination, that they were ordered to have a party. And so they got drunk and they partied. And so a lot of those guys were totally hungover, if not still intoxicated. This was never, ever mentioned until last year when this guy did the investigation and uncovered that. And I, like I said, I've never told anyone.
Okay. Everybody in the 60s was toasted. They also smoked a lot of cigarettes then, too.
But you're walking the president at, or you had to be on the flight path and get ready to take the president down a particular path, still inebriated?
And Howard Cosell did several football games half in the bag, and they used to discern liquor between the shooting of the shows on Hollywood Squares, which is why the third show was always so much funnier than the first one, because they had gotten Paul Lynn completely lit.
Wow.
again, we're applying a 2014 or a 2010 or even a 1990s view of the 60s, which is why the TV show Mad Men is so popular, because these people smoked at their desk. They kept alcohol in the desk. You went drinking at lunch. If you can imagine the modern world where you went out for a 3-martini lunch as part of an everyday business deal. This is huge news to us now. We're like, oh my God, you were protecting the president and you were drinking? I got news for you. Who paid for his campaign? Whiskey.
Okay, well.
So, the thing is, it's news to us now. It was not news at the time, unless you were drinking in the motorcade.
See, and I would say, I hope to God none of these guys that, protect the presidents today are still like that, but you never know.
it's one of these things. There's always some news article somewhere where, some city or county employee in the city or county truck got pulled over doing XYZ something stupid.
Yeah.
That happens to this very, very day. People don't always make the best possible decisions. But, were these guys ordered to go have a party? It's entirely possible. But at the time, that was not an outrageous request. They were probably told, guys, you got the president in the morning. You better party tonight because, dude, you're working tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody in 1963 would have looked at that and gone, oh, I can't go drinking. I've got to work in the morning.
Wow.
Why do you think Alka-Seltzer was so popular?
Well, that's true.
Speedy wasn't there because your tummy was upset. Speedy was there because you were freaking hungover. So it's welcome. I mean, you know, we had professional athletes on TV going, hey, I smoke Viceroy because they help me run faster.
Right.
It's such an alien world to ours. And yes, we can apply the colder, more technological eye today. But keep in mind, there's nothing, there's no piece of evidence that is not emotionally damaged from this entire investigation.
Right. Well,
so it's really difficult for somebody now, 51 years later.
Really? Did you just do that?
I had to do a little math there. You know? As I love to point out to everybody, I am actually older than Doctor Who. So, you know, I'm not saying I watched the assassination on TV. I'm just saying I could have. Okay.
Okay.
We got. There's a lot of dirt on this planet a lot younger than I am.
Uh-huh.
So it's a different world. It's a different environment. And yes, we can look at it today and go, well, your smoking gun is right here because obviously somebody was sabotaging the Secret Service.
Right.
No, they weren't. It was just the time and era. Everybody smoked. Everybody drank. And if you didn't, you were one of the weirdos or right. You were a religious fanatic.
Well, sadly, Alan, I hate to do this because
I know you have been rescued and we are now out of time.
Yeah, and I don't get to go any deeper. But I will say this, folks, if you want to find out more and actually get the answer to who shot JFK next week, and I know Alan's going to be like, yeah, right, whatever. But
I have it on good authority. It was JR.
There you go. But join me next week as I have Detective Colin McLaren. He is a world famous detective. He will be live with me next week from Australia, and we will be talking about all the evidence and give the answer to who is the person who pulled the trigger for the fatal shot. And all I can say is just remember that AR-15, because that'll be discussed a little more.
But yes, no, it's not a Huey Long theory. No, he wasn't killed by his bodyguards either.
Well, we'll have to find out.
No, I never heard that theory.
Right? So, but on that note, thanks for joining me, Alan, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
You have a wonderful night. Thanks for having me on.
All right, bud. Take care. All right, ladies and gentlemen, get ready for NinaCon coming up next here in just a few moments. And like I said, don't forget to join me next week as we have Colin McLaren on the air with us live. And we will be discussing more details, and he will give more evidence as to who did this heinous crime. But that is coming next week. So we'll see you guys next time.